ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, The First Step in God Realization, text number 30.
Dyavrakshini Chakshura Bhut Padangaha Pakshmani Vishnorahini Ubhecha తద్భ్రూర్జింభ పరమేష్టి ధిష్ణ్యం ఆపోస్య తాలూరస ఏవ జిహ్వా. దైరక్షిణి చక్షూరభూత్పదంగః పక్ష్మాణి విష్ణోరహాని ఉభే చ. తద్భ్రూవ్రజంభ పరమేష్టి ధృష్ణ్యం ఆపోస్య తాలూరస ఏవ జిహ్వా. దైరక్షిణి చక్షూరభూత్పదంగా పక్ష్మాణి విష్ణోరహాని ఉభే చ. తద్భ్రూవ్రజంభ పరమేష్టి ధృష్ణ్యం ఆభోస్య తాలూరస ఏవ జిహ్వా. ద్యౌః
The sphere of outer space. Akshini, the eyeballs. Chakshuhu, of eyes. Senses, abhut, it so became. Padangaha, the sun. Pakshmani, eyelids. Vishnoho, of the personality of Godhead. Shri Vishnu, Ahani, day and night. Ubhe, both. Cha, and. Tat, his. Bhru, eyebrows. Vijimbraha, movements. Parameshthi, the supreme entity Brahma. Dhishnyam, post. Apaha, Varuna, the director of water. Asya, his. Talu, palate. Rasaha, juice. Eva, certainly. Jihva, the tongue. The sphere of outer space constitutes his eyelids, and the eyeballs is the sun as the power of seeing. His eyelids are both the day and night, and in the movements of his eyebrows, the Brahma and similar supreme personalities reside. His palate is the director of water, Varuna, and the juice or essence of everything is his tongue. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To common sense, the description in this verse appears to be somewhat contradictory, because sometimes the sun has been described as the eyeballs and sometimes as the outer space sphere. But there is no room for common sense in the injunctions of the Shastras. We must accept the descriptions of the Shastras and concentrate more on the form of the Virat Rup than on common sense. Common sense is always imperfect, whereas the descriptions in the Shastras is always perfect and complete. If there is any incongruity, it is due to our imperfection and not the Shastras. This is the method of approaching Vedic wisdom. So short thought, but very important. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopikakanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gauraki Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. This purport, even though short, a few lines, signifies a lot for us. If we cannot accept this purport, then we have great trouble in our spiritual life. Because it is about faith. It is about accepting Shastra as it is. Our life, our teachings, all our actions are based on Shastra. And this purport is about accepting Shastra as it is without any change. Even if it is against our common sense. Now, this can lead to a question. Is it that the scriptures are completely fanatic? It is presenting some kind of a view which is against any logic and reason. Whereas one could argue that the knowledge that we can acquire from this world is sufficiently supported by logic, reason and verifiability. So in all sense, the scriptures are presenting something which is just faith or beliefs. So this is one common argument all the scientists have against the religions. And sometimes even devotees will also come to this kind of conclusions. Of course, right in the beginning, devotees can have in the very, very neophyte state, even just approaching Krishna consciousness, could have such kind of thoughts. Not only that, even in between, even one could be practicing Krishna consciousness, but this could be one means to get away from the process of Krishna consciousness. So these kinds of thought can actually allure one person. So I was thinking, we'll look into this problem a little bit. So it comes to one question. So this is a very interesting question. Why it is interesting? Because When someone questions faith or beliefs or anything in that order upon religions, we usually take a defensive stand. So natural approach is to take a defensive stand. So if someone is attacking, naturally we try to defend. We try to say, no, this is not the case, that's not the case, this is there, this can be proven, that can be proven. In that way we could take a defensive stand, which is good, which is required. And apart from the defensive stand, the devotees have taken a stand in which we are attacking, which is also important. So the problem in attacking anything is that we need to know our enemy, or we need to know the defects in the opposing elements. Then we can attack. Otherwise, it can become just, in terms of argument, it can become just sentiments, overpouring of emotions, which no one actually accepts. And it can become, it actually degrades the value of spiritual teachings even further from the point of view of the so-called scientists and philosophers. So, have seen in different talk shows and different situations, when scientists attack religions, the spiritualists do take a defensive stand, and they cannot take an attacking stand because they don't know much about the opposing party. So this is a problem in our sometimes in our preaching and sometimes to our own faith. So this point, I thought a bit and I was thinking a few interesting aspects to this. One, we could question, is the science all based on reasons? Are they all based on evidences? Are they based on repeatable evidences? Is there always verifiability in the whole process of scientific approach? So this one question we could ask. And I went through a book. The title of the book is Why Beliefs Matter. Why Beliefs Matter? And this book is by an Oxford scholar. He's a mathematician. And you know, he's a professor in Oxford University, quite well reputed. And the whole book is about how beliefs and faith are integral part of any human endeavor. One cannot restrict that to just religion or spirituality. Wherever there is humans, there will be faith, there will be beliefs. This is something which we cannot avoid. And he took many examples. So that was interesting because he was covering a wide range of subjects like quantum mechanics to cosmology, spirituality, mathematics. And he was picking various subjects and he was trying to show that, okay, there is faith in these subjects also. And he is actually arguing for that. It's a reasonable book, you know, reasonably sized, explaining all these kind of things. And he pointed out with many evidences showing how there are cases where the theorems or whatever is given along with the evidences, but they got rejected. At the same time, some of the presentations within the scientific community got accepted without any proofs. So he was actually revealing these contradictions. In fact, he was referring also to one of the important person in this field, Kuhn's, his concept of paradigm shift. That is, it takes time for believers of one theory to shift to something else. So it's just like if we have a Christian needs to be converted into Islam, or say Hindu needs to be converted into Christianity, in any combination, it takes some time for them to get convinced. In the same way, even for scientists, it takes some time to get convinced of something else and to reject the old stuff and get into something new. So the new thing is not guaranteed to be correct. But still, it takes some time. They need to develop some kind of faith, a consensus among the community to have enough faith in the new stuff. Even though there is no evidences. We are talking about evidences, but there are no evidences at all. And he was bringing, you know, different interesting examples to this. One he was presenting was the time when the scientists presented Great Continental Shift. There is a theory of Great Continental Shift, or continents were separate. We have studied all the stories, you know, of one and it got shifted and the whole kind of thing. But he provided a lot of evidences to this. But that point of time, the scientific community rejected. At the same time, the similar time, Einstein came up with the theory of relativity. But it got accepted even though it was with no proofs. Some of the proofs came after maybe 80, 90 years later. So see, one side it was got accepted without any evidences, and on the other side with evidences got rejected. And he was telling, look, this is based on faith. This is based on beliefs. This is not based on, you know, verifiable, objective evidences. He was telling about Newton, who is well respected. In fact, Newton is, you know, he's arguably he cheated something. It's the whole story behind that. Anyway, he presented, you know, the whole orbital system, the planetary orbital movement and everything. And he presented a few things and everyone accepted, but there wasn't any proofs. Because there was no way they could verify at that point of time. So when we say that everywhere there have to be evidences, observational evidences, which is not true. It's not possible. Even Stephen Hawking, he presented some theory and later he said, you know, it's wrong. People accepted, some people argued, some people accepted. So the scientific paradigm in itself is accepting that there is faith and beliefs. They do accept, some of them. So when we take a defensive approach, it is very difficult. But when we try to go forward and see what they are doing, then we can see, okay, there are many things which are against the common notion. Same problem with Darwinian evolution. So on one side, the science, the physics and other part of science. And when we move to Darwinian evolution, Srila Prabhupada questioned and challenged like anything. And it has come to a stage where there are so many anomalies that the theory needs a replacement rather than any kind of revision. Because the theory can have a revision if there are some anomalies. But anomalies are so much so that it needs a replacement. But since there is nothing to replace with, so the theory is still going on. It is simply based on faith. So we can see Dhruta Karma Prabhu and Sadaputa Prabhu, when they wrote this book, A Forbidden Archaeology, that is presenting, you know, an account of many number of evidences of anomalies which do not fit into the common framework. And showing it's not right. You know, these are anomalies which no answer to this, which cannot be just, you know, cover under the carpet, it is impossible. But still, things will go on because they don't want to accept anything spiritual. So, even if there is something to hold on to, they will definitely hold on to. So, if this is coming to, in a kind of biology, evolution, the same principle. In fact, I listened to a series of lectures by Devamrita Maharaj. It was on history of India, given in Budapest, to kind of historians and future researchers in that field. As you know, there are about 10 or 11 lectures, very full-on lectures. It was too scholarly, because too many details, and you know, if somebody is not tuned into it, one can easily get bored. It's tough ones, because so many references and so many things, using linguistics, archaeology and history and all those kind of things. And he was presenting the point that even in terms of history in itself, history of this world, what is taught in schools, in colleges, in the universities, in undergrad, in master's level, they are nice stories, which, you know, which is easy to explain, easy to believe, but the reality is something else. He was giving about the history of India, you know, various aspects like Aryan invasion theory, origin of Vedic culture, the big argument, what is the origin of Vedic culture? Origin of Sanskrit, It's a big argument. Where is it from? The most honest answer is don't know. Don't know. Which is the oldest language? Answer is unknown. So there are many things which is unknown. But when it comes to the academia, when it comes to the common students, it becomes a nice story which could be taught very easily, which could be accepted so easily. And the complications are not presented. And if one wants to know the complications, you know, when it starts, actually one could know, okay, there are problems in these arguments. They can know only after a PhD. If one actually does PhD, when gets into research, and when one is in academia, one could, if they really want, they could see that, okay, there are problems in the current way of knowing things. But then what happens? Then they are already sucked into the system. They cannot go against, because they had their family, they had to pay their bills, you know, they had to do their things, you know. So they had to do projects which will bring them some money, so accept some grants and move on with the life. So this is the state of affairs of knowledge. I think Sadaputta Prabhu used the word politics in knowledge, right? Politics, yeah, it's an interesting term, politics in knowledge. it's not fair. In fact, when I was into research, this is technology, it's not so basic science. One of my supervisors was telling me that you could develop the best algorithm in the world, you know, for certain problems. Okay, you could develop the best algorithm in the world. But the standardization and usage of this is not based on that. It is based on how different companies or different financial forces influence the decision makers. So it's not based on, even when it comes to technology to the forefront, it's not really based on any fair means. It is based on finance. So if we see the whole thing in totality, we can see that in terms of knowledge acquisition, even if you forget about the imperfect senses, okay, we accept that the senses are imperfect. And if we forget that is a key point that is mentioned in this purport, that the senses are imperfect and the proper knowledge acquisition is impossible. That is mentioned here. But even if we forget that fact, with the imperfect senses, we are trying to gain knowledge to the best of our ability. Even if we take that stand, still we can get the right knowledge. So what to speak about when we accept the reality that the senses are imperfect. So Srila Prabhupada says a very important point, that usually we say that common sense is not common. Correct? This is what we say. But Srila Prabhupada here says that common sense means imperfect senses. So it's not enough to have common sense. Okay. We say common sense is not common, means okay, it's good to have common sense. It is true in one sense, but Prabhupada says to have spiritual understanding, common sense in itself is not enough, because that just tells that we have imperfect senses. We need something more than that. So we have to go beyond something which is mundane logic and reason. Because spirituality is not based on mundane logic and reason. In fact, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he was making a very interesting point, a conceptual point, that in spirituality ultimately we cannot understand just by logic or reason. We do accept. We can't just accept, understand everything by logic or reason. Not possible. But why not take a stand in which, or that the Prabhu was stand also, wherever logic and reason possible, we do apply and come to a level where we can apply common logic and reason, and then which is beyond, then we have to take to the process to understand, not just logic and reason, not just arguments. When it came to moon landing issue, it was a big issue. Srila Prabhupada, you know, some of his disciples, they lost faith, and Srila Prabhupada, the key point he was mentioning was, okay, they don't have to believe me. They can reject me, but how can they reject Shastra? This was the final point Srila Prabhupada mentioned. That is, how can they reject Shastra? Srila Prabhupada is making the same point here as well. This is the method of approaching Vedic wisdom. Common sense is always imperfect, whereas the description in the Shastra is always perfect and complete. If there is any incongruity, it is due to our imperfection and not the Shastras. That is the method of approaching the Vedic wisdom. So, if you don't come to this platform, it is very difficult to follow this process. And we do see that there is a fair amount of logic and reason in our process also. When Acharyas write commentaries and explain things, they use a lot of analysis, they use a lot of logic, they use a lot of reasons. So wherever there is reason possible, we do use that. We don't reject that aspect at all. But we do accept that there is something beyond logic and reason. That's all. So if you ask Krishna consciousness whether it is verifiable, we do say that it is verifiable. We have Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. There are checks and balances. It is not just, you know, we are blind. We do see the different possibilities of verification. And not only that, we have different steps of advancement in Krishna consciousness. That is, Adho Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. What are they? They are different steps of advancement in spiritual life, and they are actually showing that, okay, this is verifiable in different stages. How could it be more logical than this, you know? Rupa Goswami is presenting this in such a logical fashion. Okay, each stage you can verify this. It's a process which has, you do the process and there is 100% possible to verify the process, the advancement. It's not blind. And we can see senior devotees who are making advancement. We can see examples in others. We can see examples in, you know, we can see somebody who is just senior to us, more senior, you know, who is around for, you know, 20 years, for 30 years, 40 years. So we can see advancement in devotees in so many years, and they are actually setting the right example. And they are showing that the process is working. And showing that, okay, we had to follow in their footsteps. It's not only Srila Prabhupada, it's not only our spiritual masters, but there are many spiritual masters and there are many senior devotees. And we can see examples right way from neophytes till the advanced devotee. So we have examples right in front of our eyes. Only thing we have to see. Then still, people use these things as just a reasons, kind of a, not a real reason, just a fake reasons to leave Krishna consciousness. Why it happens? When the chanting is weak, when devotees chanting go very weak, then Maya has an upper hand. Then they cannot accept these kind of things. Then these kind of questions come to the mind. When our spiritual sadhana goes low, when we become weak spiritually, then all these arguments make a lot of sense. Now, when we are strong in the association of the devotees and when we are practicing nicely, then these kind of arguments have no meaning. But when we become weak, then all these arguments become very strong and they make a lot of sense. And then this becomes a kind of reason to move away from Krishna consciousness. It had happened to many devotees. One time, Prahladananda Maharaj was telling this story. He was mentioning that one of his god brothers, Srila Prabhupada's disciple, he quite arrogantly asked Srila Prabhupada, I think one point regarding how many teachers were there in the Yadu dynasty? Can you remember? A big number. How many teachers?
I think it was about the cows, 9 lakh cows.
No. 100,000, yeah, 100,000 teachers. And, you know, something like that. You know, so many teachers. So, ask this question that, and similar big number in other case, or in war, one army had so many people. So, how can we believe this in an arrogant mood, not in a submissive mood to Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada said that if you cannot accept that part, it's okay. Don't accept that part. But that's not our main philosophy. Our main philosophy is something else, right? Our main philosophy is understanding we are servants of Krishna, we are spirit soul, okay, worshipping Krishna. You accept the main philosophy and move forward. Other things will get clarified in due course of time. So, this is Srila Prabhupada is very practical. At least if you have problem with something, but at least accept the main things. So he was practical in that way. But when the question is not genuine, what happens? They will not accept that kind of answers. And they take this as an excuse to move away from teachings of Krishna. So that is a sad situation. So when people are involved, as I made a point earlier, when people are involved or humans are involved in any activity, whether it is science or whether it is religion, faith and beliefs will exist. We cannot avoid that because we cannot change human behavior. It is there. We cannot do anything about it. Now, in this regard, there is a very, very interesting aspect. That is, there was a study done on how people accept different things. How do people accept different things? A new idea, a new concept. So, it's a kind of a psychological study. And it is very significant for us. Why? We are always presenting something which is new to the people. We have something new for the outside people. Because Krishna consciousness is not so obvious. And when we say that the senses are imperfect, we have a higher knowledge beyond the material realm, it is something new. And this comes to the point, how do they accept? So, in this study, they came to a kind of conclusion that people accept primarily based on trust and faith in that person. If somebody is presenting something, based on trust and faith in that relation, they accept. And then first they do accept mentally, and mental acceptance is not sufficient because one has to be supported by logic and reason. Some kind of rational has to be there to support, okay, I accept, but to support that. So the study showed that the rational behind, the reasons behind will be manufactured, will be generated automatically when one develops that kind of faith, when one develops that kind of trust. So this is a very important point in our preaching purpose, because when we develop that personal link with people and then they tend to accept because they like us. So when we present something, of course we present something which is actually quite contradictory to their thoughts and vision most of the time. And when we have that personal relation, since they like us, maybe they like the atmosphere, maybe they like the prasad, and they like the whole thing in totality, then when we present something, they tend to accept, okay, I will consider this. And as they like us more, they do accept. And naturally, the reasons for accepting will be generated automatically as part of the psyche. So see, so it actually comes to the point, again, personalism. So the personalism is involved in whether it is science or religion, because the human character is manifested in any case. And when it comes to our personal philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, so that personalism actually helps to bring people to Krishna consciousness. So we have to capitalize on that point, on the essential aspect of our philosophy. And same thing, Krishna also wants to see that we have faith and trust in Him, because it is about a personal relation. So personal relation means faith and trust. If an object which is inanimate, we could say, what is faith, what is trust? We could question that. But in terms of any personal relation, faith and trust is part of it. So when it comes to Krishna, of course, that relation for individual devotee is based on faith and trust. And this we can see in different levels. We can analyze, we can see in ourselves in different levels how this faith and trust exists. Now we can think about sense control, for instance. Senses and mind, how do we control? Which is an essential aspect of Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita talks about it on and on. And we can think about ourselves. How chaste are we to Krishna in terms of our sense control, mind control? Where are we facing problems? Are we taking any corrective measures to solve that? So important. So we can see it is based on faith and trust. And or at least when we see in that respect, it becomes much easier. Well, I have to control my senses. If we think in that way, it is difficult. But when we understand, okay, I am doing this because I have a relation with Krishna. have faith in Krishna. I want to go closer to Krishna. When it becomes connected to Krishna, it becomes an enjoyable process. As I said, the sense control, the mind control has two aspects. One is, there is a difficulty because of our attachment. At the same time, there is a joy of purification. So the whole sadhana bhakti, it has two aspects. One, there is an inertia, there is difficulty in moving forward. But when we move forward with our faith and trust, then there is an enjoyment of purification. So that gives us happiness because it is in relation to Krishna. Same thing with respect to service. If we are fully engaged, then we have to see how to improve the quality. And if not, we have to think how we can increase the quantity. Because it's again based on personal relation. I was thinking we could write a list of instructions given by our spiritual master or senior devotees. We can make a list. I was thinking, you know, I should make actually a list. Because I have many things, you know, many things to do. But make a list and see where are we at. This is actually personalism. We can see, okay, these are the instructions that I have received, and which, you know, in the mind, you know, here there is one, okay, I had to do this, I had to do the other thing. This I haven't made much progress, this I have made some progress. Okay, I was thinking, okay, make a list and see how well are we following those instructions and where are we at. This really helps. So this is personalism. We are saying, okay, these are the instructions, okay, I'm just doing it. So Krishna has said that he loves his devotees. You know, many aspects of his. One is, you know, he's following us as Paramatma. Wherever we are, where we are in a ditch or we are in human form, in any kind of form, Krishna is following us. He is accepting that position. He is not getting contaminated, but he is accepting that position. You know, we may do our service sometimes late, you know, sometimes, you know, improper consciousness. We offer sometimes in a half burnt. It happens many times, but still Krishna accepts. Because he sees the sincerity. We may be half awake, you know, during Mangalarati, but Krishna accepts everything. Because seeing a little bit of sincerity, he wants to reciprocate as much as he could at that point of time. In the sense, he gives much, much more than we deserve. That is Krishna's character. You know, as Chaitanya Charitamrita says, if we do a little bit of service, Krishna sees it as a lot. And if we do some mistake, he actually neglects that. Because if we try to count our mistakes, it will be a big trouble. So Krishna actually wants to neglect those. So Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a beautiful description, you know, Bhrityasya Pashyati Gurunapi Na Aparadhan. Even though we commit so many offenses, Krishna, you know, it's alright, I neglect. And he says, Seva Managapi Kritam Bahudapi Paiti. If you manak means a tiny bit of service we do, actually whatever we do is a very, very tiny portion. Managapi Bahudapi Paiti. He says, consider, okay, it's a lot of service he has done. And then he says, Managami Bhudapya Vedi Avishkaravati Pishuneshavi Nabhyasuya. So he is not envious of even to his enemies. So the point here is that he is not envious in the sense, actually we are actually acting inimically to Krishna, or the conditioned source in general, not necessarily devotees, acting inimically to Krishna because they are envious of all other entities. They are envious of all other living entities. So in that way, they are acting inimically to Krishna. And they don't want to serve Krishna. They want to challenge God. Still, Krishna is trying to help them in different ways. Sometimes in terms of punishment. But still, Krishna is trying to help. So, and he says, okay, Shilena Nirmalamati Purushottamayam. Such are his wonderful qualities. These are wonderful qualities of Krishna. So we want to associate with such a person through the process of Krishna consciousness. So that is the opportunity that we have right in front of us. So now the question is how well we can take advantage of. Then we can move faster. So if we understand this is the right direction, now the question is how fast we can go within our capacity. So yeah, I stop here and see if there are any comments or questions. Yes.
Just on that last point about
patience.
We have limits like there.
Yeah. That's according to our capacity.
So we want to push our limits sometimes.
Yeah. So devotees can be in practically three stages in their devotion. One is relaxed condition. Doing service but it's completely relaxed, you know, it's not much of a pressure, it's everything is going on. And there's no pressure at all. It's completely relaxed. So that is, and in that case, there is a chance of spacing out. It's too relaxed, and there is enough space, you know, in between. You know. So one can, the mind naturally can be spaced out. Second stage is, there is a bit of pressure, there are expectations, and one is stretched a bit. So that is recommended. We are generally stretched a bit. If we are not stretched a bit, we can ask, we can get more services, and we can be stretched a bit. There are ample of opportunities for that, no problem. So one is said, we had to be stretched a bit, so that there is not enough of time for the mind to space out. And there is, you know, there is focus, okay, you had to do these things, otherwise, you know, it will not get done, like that. So there has to be some kind of stress, it has to be stretched a little bit. Just like chanting. For example, if one is chanting too slow, what happens? Mind goes on for a ride. And when it is too fast, one cannot listen to anything. So there has to be an optimum speed in which the mind has some challenge to focus. When you have that challenge, then we keep going. In the same way, in the devotional service also, we need that challenge. Where, okay, we had to do this thing, okay, there is some challenge in front of us. Then that is in a stretched position. When we, towards that, we work, we become serious in our sadhana, because if we are not, if I don't have a good consciousness, how am I going to achieve this, which is beyond my capacity? So then, okay, so that is considered a good position, where there is a challenge, there is a little bit of stretch, and you know, one is doing it like that. And next position is pain. Pain means, you know, we cannot avoid that completely. There could be some cases where we had to take pain. In this painful situation, we may have to tolerate for some time, but that cannot go on forever. If one is in the painful position for long, and since we are not, or I am not, so sufficiently advanced, one can drop the process. So this is an art in terms of those who engage us in the service, and how we engage in our services, and how we take tasks in front of us, so that we are balanced. So we shouldn't be in the painful situation, nor should we just too relaxed. We had to be in a medium position. We can go in either direction, but there has to be a kind of equilibrium where we can stay on path. Yeah, so one has to be careful, yeah.
And one question. You mentioned that book in the beginning of the class.
Yeah.
There are another two documentaries over the last 15 years. One was by Rob Liddell, The Trouble with Atheism.
Yeah.
Where he talks about how atheism is completely faith-based. Science is completely faith-based, but they completely deny it and, you know, present it as reason.
Mm.
And another one was a recent one, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, by Ben Steen. And there he interviews and presents a lot of scientists, mainstream scientists, who are thrown out of their colleges, research centers, and everywhere else, when they presented the false in science and said that there is another dimension that we are not exploring. And the very theme of the documentary was that spirituality has no position in the scientific community. If you question the foundational principles of modern science, you are expelled. You are not seen as a scientist anymore. And these are the two very famous documentaries. I have them if anybody wants them. The question now, when we talk about faith, we understand there is Laukik Shraddha, and there is Shastriya Shraddha. Faith of a material nature, this sounds reasonable, yes, I'm in trouble, you know, my mind troubles me, Krishna consciousness is a very good alternative, that kind of faith. And the other one is Shastriya Shraddha, which Srila Prabhupada in this book but is elaborating, one should cultivate. So the question is, of the two faiths, are both going to give us the same result in Krishna consciousness? If one is not, you know, somebody like reading, you know, how am I going to cultivate Shastriya Shraddha? So more or less a lot of the faith is Laukiki Shraddha. And what is the position of the nature and quality of faith that we must imply within our spiritual lives so that we can be sure that we are going to move forward in Krishna consciousness and not dry out over a little period of time?
Okay. Generally, there are great devotees, I'll just give an example, who haven't read any of his books, but they are great devotees, but they have heard. So faith could be, you pointed out, anyone is not reading, but if one hear and develop full faith, that is also acceptable, because that is also developing faith in the teachings of Krishna. Then you are classifying it as one is faith on Shastra. Second, you are saying, what is the second Laukik, what do you exactly define Laukika Shraddha?
Laukika Shraddha as in this world is limited and myself is limited, I accept this. And there are so many things beyond my current status of comprehension.
Yeah.
Therefore, I accept what you are saying. Because whatever you are doing also sounds reasonable to me.
Okay.
I don't understand the
Fine. So we can understand that is the beginning point. That's how many come to Krishna consciousness, because there is something beyond. We are limited and this world, what is presenting, it is limited and it cannot explain everything. So that's the beginning stage. And that has to come to the Shraddha in the scriptures. It has to. By reading or listening or whichever method, it has to come to the faith in Krishna basically. Krishna and his teachings. So when one comes to that, then one's actually spiritual life begins. So that is our Adhavashraddha. Adhavashraddha means we are ready to hear what devotees speak. Adhavashraddha, Sadhu Sangha, right? So to come to Sadhu Sangha, what devotees speak? They speak based on scriptures. So developing a little bit of faith that I must listen means they are developing a faith in the scriptures. The reason to develop that faith could be something else. The precursor to that could be something else. Okay, I am limited, whatever I have got, it's not correct. They are not explaining my problem, etc. But that is leading to the faith in Shastra. So ultimately it's faith in Shastra. And why it is faith in Shastra? Because why is it so? Because that's the way Krishna communicates to us in the standard format. That is through Shastra. That is the essential element. And so in the sadhana bhakti, because from the little bit of faith, or the faith as you presented as Laukika Shraddha, that should come to the faith where which we can follow sadhana bhakti. That's the whole aim, bhajana kriya, right? Adhava Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, bhajana kriya. So we had to come to the platform of bhajana kriya. And what is the essential principle of bhajana kriya or sadhana bhakti? That too, why the sadhana bhakti? Faith in scriptures. Instruction, faith in scriptures. That is the essential element. So one may experience, one may not experience, that's a different story, but at least there has to be faith in scriptures. So our process, in any way, whatever reason one comes to the process, they have to end up in faith in scriptures. So that's why faith in scriptures means first one should have knowledge of scriptures. Then one can have faith. So that's why the study of Shastra is recommended. Otherwise, without knowledge, what kind of faith you have in the Shastra? So that's the reason. The advancement in sadhana bhakti is kind of synonymous with developing more understanding and acceptance of Shastra. In Vaidhi stage at least. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
So, just give me the reference to
Krishna
not being
inimical. You
said Krishna is not
inimical,
even though
we're enemies. Okay, that is Chaitanya Charitamrita. Should be Madhya Leela. One second. Maybe it's part of Sanatana Siksha. Don't know. I know the verse, but yes. Sorry, it's in Antya, chapter 1, verse 108. Right, the Shri Rupa Goswami's second meeting with the Lord.
Yes.
Yeah.
His faith is very strong.
Yeah.
But his knowledge of scripture is not very strong.
Mm.
His condition of knowledge of scripture and faith both are weak. So I was thinking that some people could have strong faith though they don't have so much knowledge of the scripture also.
Mm.
They can't, you know, use argument, logic.
Yeah. Just connecting that to what Prabhu said, that is also faith in Shastra actually. We cannot remove the faith in Shastra from the point body of, because they have faith that serving Krishna, you know, or serving devotees, I can get everything. Actually, it is faith in Shastra. They may have read or they may not have read, but it's again showing the faith in Shastra. Explicitly, you know, I haven't read actually the verse. I may not know the verse. That's okay. But still, it's actually showing faith in Shastra again. Of course, what you point is very valid. One may not be vastly knowledgeable, but because of that one can. And Krishna can reveal within the heart. But still we say, okay, study scriptures. The capacity varies. How much one can, you know, carry with oneself, that varies. But still, put an end to it. That's our... Okay,
in the same direction, what makes devotee Prabhupada has mentioned that Krishna consciousness is not on a mental or intellectual level, but it's on a spiritual level.
Yeah.
So if someone is intellectual, should we ask them to dance and sing, you know?
Yeah.
They are required.
Yeah.
The other side, you know, if someone is not very much into reading Shastra, should we ask them to be a Bhagavatam, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point.
So these are the spiritual activities that brings you to upper level.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but faith is spiritual. This faith is spiritual. Point number two. Prabhupada points out that the service attitude, that is the sign of elevation. That actually, how eager is one to serve Krishna. It can be in different ways, but that eagerness to serve Krishna, that is actually, that is a sign. That is a sign. I'll just say
that. Just example of that blind power.
Blind power. That's right, yeah. Yeah. Guru. There is not on the platform of sadhana, that is beyond sadhana. It is the on a prema level, bhava prema level, where he had so much of realization. Actually, the thing is, he had faith in Guru's instruction and he had knowledge also. He had faith in Guru, he had faith in Shastra, and he had faith, you know, he had all knowledge actually, because he understood the conclusion. He understood the relation between Arjun and Krishna, and you know, he could relish that. So, something different. And the final
just
question.
Just point, Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, verse 26.
Mm.
Again, there are those who, although not very conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Personality of God after hearing from authorities.
Yeah.
Their tendency to accept the authority helps them to transcend the power of birth and death.
Mm.
So, the same thing. You may not be very conversant, but if you actually imply the faith, that's following the principle of the Vedas. So you may not really know the Shastra, I mean the verses, but you're doing what the verses are saying.
Exactly. That is actually showing the faith in Shastra.
Practically.
Practically it is, It is a fact, Okay. Thank you very much. Granthasya Madhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki.